You're listening to a podcast of Spurious Morality. Hello and welcome to a podcast of Spurious Morality. I'm Johnston, and with me again this week I have Greg.
Good morning or afternoon or evening.
I think we're covering all three during this recording, aren't we? And hello to Jimmy.
Hello.
So we're carrying on with our look at season 20 of Doctor Who. I can't believe we've actually got through 20 seasons doing this now. It's rather fantastic. So previously we looked at the first four stories in this season. So we've done Ark of Infinity, Snake Dance, Mordred Undead and Terminus. And when we sort of last said goodbye, we said goodbye to Nyssa. Nyssa left the TARDIS. So before we dive into Enlightenment, we're just going to pause and have a little bit of a chat about Nyssa's time on the TARDIS, because she sort of had a bit of a weird and interesting introduction that we didn't sort of go too deeply into, really, when we did season 18. We were too busy talking about Tom Baker leaving in Legopolis, but Nyssa was not really meant to be a companion, turned up in a story, they liked her, so a couple of episodes later, she just sort of arrived. And then that was it. She was part of the TARDIS then. She sort of turned up, witnessed the regeneration and sort of worked very well with the Fifth Doctor. Her and the Fifth Doctor had a bit of alone time in Ark of Infinity. And as I mentioned last time, I actually really liked the dynamic of just the two of them. And it's kind of a shame we never really got just the Fifth Doctor and one companion on screen, not for any more than one story anyway. So I guess really here we're just talking about, you know, was Nyssa perhaps a bit underserved? Was there more potential with the character never fully unlocked because of the busy TARDIS? And generally, you know, did she get a good exit, I guess? I'm going to ask Greg first. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing with Nyssa, I think, is the unexplored potential. I mean, consider the fact that, as you said, you know, she wasn't intended to be a companion, and yet by the end of the next season, she was suddenly the only companion. Now, granted, Tegan wasn't ever going to leave permanently, but it was still an interesting, you know, juxtaposition. I think the character was underserved, first of all, because there were just so many other characters running around. I know there were contractual reasons, but, you know, she just gets arbitrarily written out of stories like Kinda. And so, you know, she rarely got a chance to be, you know, the featured companion in a story. I mean, Ark of Infinity, certainly, and then some of Terminus, most of Terminus, I would say. I think the other big issue with her is that she was underserved as a character. She was introduced as this, you know, very intelligent, you know, young woman scientist from Trakken, someone whose intellect, you know, in some ways could push the Doctor, which is, you know, something the show's done before, like with Zoe. But they really leaned into that part of her character. They really pointed at that, and that was what defined Nyssa. And that meant that Sarah Sutton was often underplaying the part because she was, you know, more, you know, logical and scientifically minded rather than emotional. And it meant that she didn't get a lot of scenes of just character work of emotion. Now, granted, classic Doctor Who was never, you know, a feature for actors to show off their deep grasp of character, but she was particularly hurt by that. And I think that Nyssa has sometimes this reputation among fans of being a boring character. And I think while that might be true in terms of what was shown on screen, I think that Sarah Sutton had more capability than that. I mean, I think in Terminus, she shows a surprising amount of range. And perhaps it shouldn't be surprising, but because she didn't get a chance to explore it in most of the show otherwise, it was surprising. And yeah, I think the character is a missed opportunity. It's summed up by she gets a brief scene in Legopolis to reflect on the fact that her entire civilization and all of her people have been destroyed and are dead. And then it's maybe referenced a couple more times in passing for the rest of her tenure when it should be a defining part of her character. And I think that sums up Nyssa as a whole. And I think that's unfortunate.
Yeah, I think, funnily enough, it's not that I'm sort of trying to compare tragedies here, but Nyssa lost her entire, not just a planet, but a galaxy as well. Now, when we first met him, Adric lost his brother. Now, that seems to be referenced and seems to influence Adric's character a hell of a lot more than the loss of the entirety of the Trakan Union sort of does on Nyssa. So they sort of did the work a little bit better with one character and didn't do it so well with another. And, you know, even sort of Tegan has quite a lot of anti-Vanessa angst moving forward from Legopolis. So Nyssa seemed to be the most forgotten character in terms of character work, which again is daft because there's probably the most potential there, I think. Jimmy, anything you want to add about Nyssa?
Yeah, I think we got really lucky as fans that J&T tried to pull that twist with Tegan's left when she didn't want to. Oh, wait, here she is again at the start of the next season and giving us that gap for stories that Big Finish and the books and so on have used of just the Fifth Doctor and Nyssa together. And I think it's really lucky that we got that because it gave her as a character and Sarah as an actress to really put the polish on the character and show how great she could be. And I think, like you were saying about the underreaction to Trakan going, that's often a thing with her. But I think it also brings to mind that expression about still waters run deep. Like you can say, oh, she's not bawling her eyes out and whatever, but you can sort of tell that she's devastated. It's like, yeah, it doesn't get referenced back enough, but yeah, I think Nyssa is a great character. I mean, she's my favourite Fifth Doctor companion, and I'm glad we got that gap with her. And yeah, there's not really much else to say, though. It's, great character, great that she got the gap, and it's a shame she got underserved by the material a lot, but, I mean, I think she shines despite it.
Yeah, I think that gap and that sort of Big Finish pairing that we got a lot of, particularly earlier on, of just the Fifth Doctor and Nyssa, I do think it worked wonders. You know, it gave us another chance to revisit Trakan, and it, you know, gave us chances to do a little bit of facing up to the Cybermen again after the events of Earthshock and all that kind of thing.
Can you imagine if they tried to create a gap when, if Tegan had stayed the whole time on TV? Oh no, Doctor, what's happened? Tegan has disappeared. Oh my, what a surprise. Like, it wouldn't have worked as well, would it?
She's off studying graphology.
Yep.
With Victoria. Somewhere there's a companion-only special where they're all just studying graphology. I'm sure that's probably a companion chronicle waiting to happen or something like that. But yeah, it's we do have that gap, and it's very, very nice that it actually does fit into continuity. They've not had to sort of force a gap in there as they do with so much Fifth Doctor stuff, because apart from that gap between Time Flight and Arc of Infinity, Tegan is always there. And when Tegan isn't, Turlo is, and when Turlo isn't, Perry is. But it's a very difficult era to kind of break into continuity-wise, so thankfully we do have this one for Nyssa, and even if Nyssa was underserved on screen, she's sort of had the opportunity to expand a bit with Big Finish, which is always a good thing. Alas, though, we like the TARDIS crew, must carry on without Nyssa. So previously we've started the Black Guardian trilogy. We're still at the stage where Turlo is trying to kill the Doctor at the orders of the Black Guardian. He's a bit hesitant to do so, but definitely a morally murky character still at this point. So we're moving into the final Black Guardian trilogy story now, which is Enlightenment. I mean, a lot of people consider this to be one of the best Fifth Doctor stories. I think Peter Davison himself's a big fan of this one, isn't he? And I can understand why. It's a very, very fun, entertaining story, but it does deal with some like big ideas and big concepts. It's been a while since Doctor Who went a bit conceptual on us. I guess it was Warrior's Gate, and this is nothing like Warrior's Gate. Some wonderful imagery in this one. The special effects actually work really well. The sailing ships in space, and they were redone sort of beautifully for the DVD and the Blu-ray and all that kind of thing. It's a very, very nice looking story. Possibly one of the best of the 80s, I think it'd be fair to say. We get the White Guardian back in this as well. It's worth noting that the White Guardian and the Black Guardian are played by their original actors. It's the same actors that we had in The Key to Time, even if they seem to have developed a little bit of a bird fetish since then. It's nice that we have that level of continuity. But yeah, I really like Enlightenment. I think it's perhaps not the conclusion to this trilogy that you'd expect. You know, there's no big Dr. Turlo face-off, as it were. It just kind of becomes apparent that Turlo's been working for the Black Guardian, and the Doctor just kind of goes with it. And Turlo kind of gets out of his deal by handing over Enlightenment, which sort of burns the Black Guardian away. It's not really a story that's about its conclusion. It's a story about the journey to get there. I think we've got some great characters and some really great guest performances and some sort of interesting high camp stunt casty guest performances as well. But all in all, I think not only is this a great story, it's a good concluding story to this Black Guardian trilogy, even if it does kind of subvert what you would expect from the conclusion of a storyline. But then again, so did The Key to Time the last time the Guardians turned up. So I think this does a Guardian finale better than the Armageddon Factor, to say the least. Greg, talk to us about Enlightenment.
You know, one thing I just want to point out, and I may have said this last week, I don't recall, but there's a big deal made with season 20 about how, this is the 20th anniversary season, and, you know, every story is going to bring back a, you know, something from the past. It's like, all right, cool. So you get Arc of Infinity, and that's got the Omega, and it's got the Time Lords and Gallifrey, and all right. And then you got Snake Dance, and it brings back the Mara, all right. And then you got Modern Undead, and, you know, you bring back the Black Guardian, and you bring back the Brigadier, and it's like, oh man, this is great. And then you get to Terminus, and it's the Black Guardian again. Oh, okay. And then you get to Enlightenment, and it's the Black Guardian yet again. Oh, that's exciting, I guess. No, I mean, it doesn't really affect the story at all, but I kind of think that's funny. In terms of Enlightenment itself as a story, should note off the top, it's the first Doctor Who story written by a woman, which, you know, probably shouldn't have taken 20 years, but here we are. It's interesting in that it really sidesteps a lot of the, you know, Eric Sayward like turn towards Earthshock style stories and really takes us back to the Bidmead era of, you know, of conceptual work. It's visually very interesting. The effects aren't bad. I watched it with the updated effects, so it's hard to comment 100% on that, but I've seen it in its original form. But just, you know, the imagery of sailing ships and just, you know, ships from different historical periods going through space is a really cool one. I like the, it's kind of got this old, like, 60s feel about how, you know, you spend a lot of the first chunk of the story with mostly just the regular cast, like, exploring this new place and finding out more about it as the episodes progress. It's got some very interesting casting. I think the Eternals are a fascinating concept. I love the line that says, you know, are there lords? Oh, you're a Time Lord. I didn't know there were, or are there lords in such a small domain, which is a fascinating thing. And then, you know, it wraps nicely into the Guardian story insofar as this is a proxy war for the Guardians, you know, to see who can control Enlightenment. I don't really think that it subverts the Black Guardian arc per se. I mean, I think it's pretty consistent with, you know, Turlough slowly resisting the Black Guardian's control and eventually overcoming it. I think the issue with this story is that it kind of subverts itself. I think the whole plotline with the Eternals and with the race slowly gets pushed aside and is just kind of lost in favor of resolving the Turlough thing. Like, I don't know that it really works with the themes of the story to have everything end with Turlough being the one making a decision about what to do with the prize from the race. I mean, yes, it makes sense to have Turlough finally be forced to choose sides, but in terms of the story of Enlightenment, I'm not sure it works all that well. But, you know, that being said, it's still a really good story. It's just a different feeling story, and I think that's something that the 80s are very good for in Doctor Who, especially seasons 19 and 20, where you get these stories that feel more speculative, they feel more imaginative, and they're not going for, you know, Star Wars, Flash Gordon, etc. So, yeah, I like Enlightenment a lot. I don't know that it fits very well in the Turlough Black Guardian arc, and I'd be curious to know what the story would be like if it didn't have that, I don't want to call it baggage, but if it didn't have those responsibilities along with it.
Part of me wonders if they could have maybe, did it have to be a trilogy, the Black Guardian thing? Should it have been resolved a story later so we actually get to focus on what's going on in Enlightenment a bit? But then again, the King's Demons doesn't need to be a Black Guardian quadrilogy conclusion. So I guess there's that. What you were saying about the returning villains, obviously, yeah, it's kind of a little bit of a cop-out to have the Black Guardian as the returning villain for three of these stories, considering his screen time before season 20 was seconds. However, I do think that I'm really glad they didn't try to sort of shoehorn Zygons into this or something like that. Like, I'm really, really glad that actually this is allowed to be its own story, and it doesn't have... I mean, same with Terminus. You know, Terminus wouldn't have worked if all of a sudden the Zarbiad have turned up or something like that. So I am glad that they
That would have worked really well.
You see, as soon as I said it, I thought, damn it, actually, I want that story now. Ditch the end of the universe stuff and just have a little Zarbi invasion instead. But no.
Zarbi!
Exactly what 1980s television needed.
Exactly.
I'm kind of glad that they kind of went for the cop-out option of the Black Guardian's the returning villain and this story's going on over here as well. But you're right, by the time we get to the end of Enlightenment, the actual plot of Enlightenment doesn't particularly matter so much. I do love the idea that the Black Guardian has another agent knocking about. In this case, it's Captain Rack, the villain of the story. I think that's absolutely great. Like, he's already kind of manipulating what's going on here, and it is this sort of proxy war between the Guardians, but the Black Guardian is being underhanded and sneaky as usual. It's kind of a shame that the concept of the White Guardian not actually being perfect isn't really explored. Like, it's kind of hinted at in the Rebus operation, the whole nothing will happen, Doctor, nothing at all, the kind of veiled threat. And Big Finish sort of play quite nicely with the White Guardian being not all that nice a figure, actually. This does kind of, for the most part, just have him as, he's not the evil one. A little bit more nuance would have been nice, and I think in there is room for it in a story like Enlightenment. Jimmy, what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I really enjoy this one. It's probably, I mean, it's a while since I've rewatched season 21 because I've been waiting for us to get to it on the podcast. But if nothing changes, then Enlightenment's probably my favourite TV Fifth Doctor story. I really enjoy this one, and it surprises me how much I do because it's right after my favourite Fifth Doctor companion, Missa, has left, and yet the story after's the favourite. It's the same thing with the first Doctor. Ian and Barbara are my favourite companions, and yet the Time Meddler's my favourite story. So, interesting little thing there. But, I really love this one. It's got such a great atmosphere, and I think the special effects were actually pretty good because I haven't got the Season 20 collection yet, so I haven't seen the new effects. But because the old DVD special effects were in that awful butchered down to widescreen and half the story cut out thing, I watched the normal effects for once, and so they actually held up pretty well. I was really happy to see that, and yeah, I love the philosophical thing at the end of the Enlightenment was the diamond, wasn't the diamond, it was the choice, and I think it makes a great end to Turlough's initial trilogy by giving him that choice and him choosing right. And the sort of question of from the Doctor's non-reaction to sort of had the Doctor already worked it out? Did he already know that Turlough was doing this and yet he trusted him anyway? And I think it's interesting to think about. Also, I have to say another thing that I loved in this story was that's what happens when you lose your notes. I liked at the end the destruction of the gem that was going to destroy the ship from Tegan's tiara, but I thought it was a bit odd how they smashed it to pieces and then they're like, oh shoot, wait, it's broken into pieces and now each piece is going to be that powerful on its own. And instead of rolling up the carpet it's on and taking it and throwing it, they try to pick up individual bits and pieces and it's like, okay, I get you're trying to make this look dramatic, but it just makes them all look a bit stupid that they don't think, take it all. But yeah, it's a good story despite little faults like that, and I think certainly it holds up really well, other than the bird hats, obviously, but those are a problem in the previous stories too. I really enjoyed this one, and it was definitely a favourite to revisit.
It's definitely, even if it's not your favourite story ever, I think it's very easy to look at this and go, yeah, that is one of the best of the Peter Davison era. Like, it's just an all-round very good production. It's a fantastic script. It's really well directed.
Oh, I did realise, just as you started, I just realised the thing I forgot that I really wanted to mention is at the end of the first episode when Turlough decides, oh, I can't do it, I can't kill him, I'm going to be trapped here forever, I'm going to throw myself up into space and suicide myself, and the Doctor's reaction, like, of don't be an idiot. It's like, it's good that you wanted to stop him doing that, but maybe not the best way to phrase it. Don't be an idiot, Turlough. So yeah, that is one of the other tiny little problems with an otherwise brilliant story for me. That little moment just felt a bit off.
I wanted to, I forgot to point out, Enlightenment, to when it was broadcast, there was a great historical event that occurred, something that truly shaped the future of not only the world, but the universe as a whole.
It's your birthday, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
How did you know?
I saw that one coming. So, okay, well, we've had our finale to the Black Guardian trilogy. It's been a fantastic... it's been a fantastic trilogy of stories. Personally, I'd pick Mordrin as my favourite of the three. As I said last time, I'd pick Mordrin Undead as my favourite story of this season. But I think all three stories are very, very good. And Enlightenment, it does the finale well. It does the finale of the trilogy well. It could have done it better. It could have been done differently. But, you know, I do like what it does. Which kind of... So I'm not a big fan of this next story. We're moving on to The King's Demons. It's really not my favourite, but I can't work out if it's really not my favourite because it just feels like a little bit of a hanger-on at the end of what's been a pretty good season so far, or whether it is just a sort of really boring two-parter. Our returning villain is the Master, which... Yeah, we've had a lot of him now, actually. You know, he's popped up twice in season 18, twice in season 19. He shows up here and he shows up in the Five Doctors straight afterwards as well. Love the Master. It's great that we're getting so much Master in the 80s, but I sort of feel like there could have been something else here. There could have been maybe some other recurring villain. You know, I've already mentioned Zygons once during this podcast, and... it's a story about shape-shifting, just saying. But no, what we've got is a Master story, and the Master has got himself a new pet robot called Chameleon, who, really cool concept, and, you know, for the time, a pretty decent-looking prop, you know, a decent bit of kit, something interesting to come to Doctor Who, and I really like the fact that they sort of take Chameleon on as a companion, and I really like that, As usual, Tegan's not sure about this companion. This is becoming a bit of a theme now. Like anything that came into the TARDIS after Tegan, Tegan doesn't like. Tegan's not always wrong about that either when you think about it. But the story just doesn't do much for me. Like, this isn't the Master firing on all cylinders. You know, we've had the Master in the last couple of seasons. We've had him try to harness a... alien mystical power source on Trakan to basically make himself all-powerful and immortal. We've had him destroy a good chunk of the universe. We've had him set a revenge trap for the Doctor on a planet where it all went a bit crazy and Escher-like. We've had him do whatever the hell he was doing in Time Flight, something about fixing his TARDIS. And in this, he's just like, you know what, I'm going to stop the signing of the Magna Carta. Like, a few thoughts occur. One is, maybe the Doctor has foiled the Master so many times recently that he's starting at level one again. Let's do a basic bit of villainy and we'll build back up to wiping out chunks of the universe. And the second thought that occurs is, you're bringing back villains from the history of Doctor Who. You're doing a story where somebody is meddling in history and you're not using the monk. Come on, guys. Anyway, I'll keep my rant to that, but honestly, I'm not a fan of this one. I don't think the Master is the right choice of villain, and I just don't think this is a story with much to offer, and it just feels a bit like a damp squib after... sort of the previous few stories. Maybe you guys like it more than I do. What do you think, Greg?
I think I like it a bit more than you do, just because it is kind of fun and it doesn't take very long, which is good. It kind of reminds me of the Muppet Christmas Carol, where Fozziwig gives his, you know, Christmas speech, and then Statler and Waldorf are like, "That was the speech. It was dumb. It was pointless. It was short. I loved it." Yeah, I you know, I agree that the master's scheme here is just ridiculous. And like, it would almost be okay if he was just going for the small time villainy of disrupting Magna Carta and screwing with Earth history just because he could in a Time Meddler-ish fashion. But instead, like, he starts ranting about how that'll like undo civilization and cause chaos, and then he'll emerge as the ruler or something. It makes absolutely no sense. And it all, I mean, it doesn't even make sense as a plan. Like, okay, they don't sign Magna Carta. Well, it's still written. Like, it doesn't disappear. Like, people are going to think of the same things. Like, it gives me a headache to think about it. What I do like about it is, I mean, it's a beautiful looking story, for one thing. The Doctor Master sword fight is a little less limp than most Doctor Who sword fights have been, which is good to see. I think Gerald Flood playing the King is awesome. I mean, he's doing this weird like Laurence Olivier accent, and the singing, "We sing in praise of total war." It's ridiculous, but it helps the story a bit to give it some character. I like Chameleon as an idea. I mean, I think it's pretty clear that the creators of Chameleon way oversold its capabilities. And yes, I know one of them passed away, you know, soon after this, and they were never able to use Chameleon the way they wanted to. But I'm pretty sure they were never going to be able to use Chameleon the way they wanted to. And he was always going to end up shoved into a closet until Planet of Fire. So it's a wasted opportunity in some ways, but I don't think there was any possible way it was going to succeed in the way that they thought. It's a good story for Tegan. Turlough seems just kind of there. Like, he's not really involved with the plot so much. And he, like, near the end, like, he still doesn't even know who the Master is, which is it's interesting that they keep that consistency, but you'd think, like, while writing that, you'd be like, maybe we should involve him more. But it doesn't work really well. It's not very good. It's the worst story of this season by a significant margin, but I don't think it's terrible. It's fun. It gets in, it gets out. I can't really hate the two episode stories because they just move. And as I've always said, Doctor Who is at its absolute worst when it's boring. And for all the things you can say about the King's Demons, it doesn't bore me.
See, unfortunately, I do just find this one really boring. Like, it feels longer than some four-parters. Anyway, that's me. I do think Chameleon presented an opportunity that they should probably have taken and missed, which is, okay, so fine. The robot was never, ever, ever going to be a viable prop to be, you know, taking part in the action of Warriors of the Deep, creeping around villages of the Awakening and descending tunnels of Frontios, that kind of thing. But you've got a character here who can look like anything or anyone. I really do think there was an opportunity here to kind of have a guest actor playing a companion each week. Oh, Chameleon, this week you look like, I don't know, Peter Miles or something like that. There was an opportunity.
Forego the robot entirely, you know?
Yeah. Just like at the start of the story, Chameleon happens to look. Hell, get a past companion back. Have Chameleon look like Adric for the week. Get Matthew Waterhouse back in for an episode. I do think there was a real opportunity there. Like, we could have had a guest actor as companion as Chameleon each week. Chameleon's trying out a different form or a different body. It's not the wildest concept that Doctor Who's ever done. Anyway, Jimmy, you talked to us about King's Demons.
Yeah, I like this one more than I think either of you do. It's not like a classic or anything. It's not particularly brilliant, but it's good, decent, enjoyable. I mean, clearly, and is the biggest fault with the thing. I mean, as you say, the problem's with the prop, and they should have just used a guest actor, and maybe when they realised the prop wasn't working, instead of trying to keep with it, just made a robot costume for someone, because, yeah, the prop, even if it had it been able to do all the things that they thought it could, it still didn't look very good. I think it's a bit of a letdown, but other than that, I enjoyed the story. I mean, the Master's Plan is crap, but it's got a good atmosphere, a good period setting. It's got that nice, if a little bit cheesy, line about, oh, he's the greatest swordsman in France. Haven't we told you? We're in England. I mean, it's fun. I mean, yeah, as I say, there's nothing particularly brilliant about it, but it's enjoyable, entertaining, and other than Chameleon, I think it's, pretty much fine. There's not really much more I can say, though. It's two quick, fun episodes. That's it. That's all it wanted to be. That's all it needed to be.
Maybe I'm just being a grump about it, or maybe sort of going back to my original theory from before, it's because it comes after such an excellent run of stories, quite significant stories as well. It just feels like a little bit of a limp ending to the season. It wasn't meant to be the ending to the season. There was the story that eventually became Resurrection of the Daleks, sort of cancelled due to strikes or something along those lines, I think. But that's, yeah, it just feels like a bit of a flat ending to a really damn good season, actually. But in some ways, the season didn't quite end there, because a few months after broadcast completed, The Five Doctors, we got an anniversary special. And I think this is great. This is absolutely amazing. This isn't just a story that fits into the season like The Three Doctors was. This is a fully dedicated celebratory episode of 20 years of Doctor Who, and it does it properly. It brings back past Doctors, it brings back past companions, which we've never really had before. Okay, you know, Brigadier pops up in Mordrin Undead, fine, but we've never had a proper companion return before, and all of a sudden we've got loads. Those that they couldn't get in to do the full story, they got in for cameos. You know, we have a lot of characters pop up in cameo. It's kind of a shame that some of the people that are missing are missing. You know, there's various reasons for it, everything from they weren't contactable, they weren't invited, they weren't available on the day. But ultimately, I think, to this day, I think The Five Doctors is the best celebration of Doctor Who there's been. I'm not saying it's the best anniversary or special or celebratory story, but I'm saying it's the one that takes the concept of celebrating Doctor Who up to that point and really running with it. Getting Terence Dix to write it was absolutely the right thing to do. You know, he'd been script editor in one of the show's most popular eras. He'd written across a couple of others. He was a very reliable writer. He was also the writer that did the most Target books, which, you know, by that stage were pretty iconic. So The Five Doctors was just like before they'd even started, the group of people they got together, the writer and, you know, the number of returning cast and that kind of thing they were able to get, they were on to a winner. And I think Terence Dix actually does a very good job of balancing a story with so many main characters and so many different plot threads and all that kind of thing. There's nothing big or clever going on. It's Doctor and companions are in an area. They have to get to a place. In the end, they all get to the place and work together to defeat a bad guy. On the way there, they meet Cybermen, Daleks, the Master, Yeti. Yeti's a nice touch. But the real villain is actually the Doctor's mentor. It's Barusa. It's a character that we are well, that not only have we been familiar with for the best part of the last 10 years of Doctor Who, but also somebody who was in season 20 in Ark of Infinity. Kind of a shame that Bruce has undergone another regeneration since then. It would have been nice to have continuity in actor as we have with Paul Jericho as Castellan, but I don't care. It kind of works. I guess the fact that he's regenerated and wants to be president forever in his new regeneration does work, and it's a absolutely brilliant performance. This one does feel special. It's a special that feels special, and I don't think that's something Doctor Who fully captured again until The Power of the Doctor, which again is a special that feels special, just because of what it's doing. And that also relies on Daleks, Cybermen, the Master, returning companions, and that kind of thing. I think it's a winning formula. It's not the best story ever. It's not even the best story of the season. Well, the season that it's closely associated with and produced alongside, I should say. But it's a good celebration. It does what it needs to do. And I genuinely feel like they did justice to 20 years of Doctor Who when they made this. Greg, where do you stand on Five Doctors?
I cannot evaluate this story without a huge amount of bias because it is my favorite Doctor Who story in many ways. It's nowhere near the best, but it's one of my favorites, and that's because I've seen it far more times than any other Doctor Who story. When I was a kid, my dad had taped it off of TV, and I watched it so many times just because the idea of having all of these doctors and all of these companions together was just incomprehensible to me, especially because when I was a kid, I was unable to see any of the black and white era of the show. And so, you know, this and the Three Doctors was my only chance to see Patrick Troughton. Of course, it's not William Hartnell in this, but this is the only story I have where the First Doctor is up and walking around and not, you know, stuck in a thing. So it holds a special place in my heart because of all of that. Also, I'm from Chicago in the U.S., and the Five Doctors actually had its world premiere on our local PBS station here, WTTW. It didn't air until November 25th in the UK for whatever reason. And yeah, the first TV station anywhere that played it was the one I watched Doctor Who on. Now, I didn't watch it at the time because I was 8 months old, but in the future, yeah, they re-aired it a number of times. But yeah, it's as you say, it is the most celebratory Doctor Who story. And it just completely leans into it. It is all about just getting all of these actors together and putting them on screen and just letting them do their thing. You know, I think Pertwee's probably the best example. Okay, we get him, you know, he drives the car, he gets, you know, action sequences with throwing the rope and the rest and warrior robot. And yeah, and he gets to briefly meet the Cybermen, which is, you know, something that didn't happen on TV.
I was just about to cut in with exactly that. Yes, yeah. We get the Third Doctor and the Cybermen.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you're right, Terrence Dix is the perfect writer for this because he has this instinct for, you know, what makes Doctor Who Doctor Who and what kinds of things you need to throw into a story to, you know, bring it together. And it works incredibly well because of that. It's been said, and I agree, that it's almost a good thing that Tom Baker didn't want to participate in this because it's hard to see how you'd involve him as well without it feeling overstuffed. And perhaps it would have worked. I mean, I do trust Terrence Dix or whoever would have ended up writing it, but I think having a doctor kind of sidelined here is a good thing. And I also, I agree with Tom's position that, like, he was bigger than the role and having him come back so soon, I mean, he would have felt like he was overshadowing everyone else for better or for worse. And so, yeah, I think that works out. Really, the worst part of it is its treatment of Susan. I mean, okay, so she trips and twists her ankle, and that's just kind of a winking nod at, you know, what the 60s companions went through. Fine, that doesn't bother me so much. But they, you know, she's a grown woman, and they write her like she's still 15 years old, and that's irritating. And then they just stick her in the TARDIS with Turlough and don't do anything with her. Like the Peter Davison tries to, like, you know, show some meaning and like, oh, I'm, you know, meeting my granddaughter after all this time, but he gets absolutely no lines about it. So it's just all through, you know, acting and facial acting and eye contact, and the camera's not really on him. So you can't, that's just a huge missed opportunity. I don't mind them pushing Turlough aside because, you know, this isn't about the current companions. I like putting Tegan with the First Doctor. She, you know, puts like, all right, she's done the Fifth Doctor. Now let's move to the, you know, the professional level of grumpiness. and you know, and I mentioned the grumpiness. Like, I think Richard Herndahl leans a little too much into that part of the First Doctor's character. Like, there's nothing of Hartnell's childlike goofiness here. You know, there's maybe one instance of a giggle. Like, the character was not a grumpy and miserable old man almost any of the time, honestly, as we've seen, you know, back in our episodes covering that era. But at the same time, like, I kind of get it, because for whatever reason, that was the image of the First Doctor that had persisted in the public eye. And it's not like at this point you could have gone back and watched a bunch of First Doctor stories, except the first one where he is a grumpy and mysterious old man. So, you know, I understand why it's portrayed that way. It's just, now that we can see the vast majority of the Hartnell era, you realize that Richard Herndahl's impression isn't as multi-layered as it should have been. Troughton's great. I mean, it's like he never left the part. Pertwee's like he never left the part. Davison's a good incumbent doctor for this because, you know, he doesn't have the superstar like wattage that, you know, John Pertwee has, and he's fully willing as an actor to step back and let the, you know, returning doctors like have the stage, and I think that works really well. I like bringing the companions back. I like having the cameo appearances of more companions. Pairing the Brigadier with the Second Doctor is not, you would just assume he'd be with the Third Doctor, but I think putting him with the Second Doctor is really a smart idea. It's just everything about it works, and it's so much, it's better than it has any right to be. Like, this should be a disaster, right? This should be taking a bunch of elements of the show and cramming them together into a spectacular, and it should have just fallen apart and not worked. And yet somehow it all hangs together and it all does what it's supposed to do. And I think one of my favorite things about it too is that it ends in a way that is completely unexpected, where, you know, the doctors at the end step aside and let the villain win. And of course, he who wins shall lose. And that is not something the show's really tried very much, but it really encapsulates like the Doctor Who ethos of you know, intelligence and brain power overcoming, you know, brute force and megalomania. And so I think that resolution sums everything up. And yeah, and I mean, they're a little on the nose with it at the end, you know, that's how it all started. But I do like the idea of ending it with the Doctor running away from his responsibilities on Gallifrey, because that is how it started. And yeah, I will never say a bad word about this story. It's one of my favorites of all time, maybe my favorite of all time. It's great, and I'm we're so lucky that we have it.
Yeah, it's a good celebration done well, and it's the right celebration done well. And I can understand why other sort of producers since, showrunners since, have kind of edged away from doing this kind of thing, because you're never going to do it as well as the Five Doctors does. Like, absolutely, like, I don't care who's writing it, whether it's Russell T. Davis or Moffat or anybody. you're not going to do as good a job as the Five Doctors did in just encapsulating that sense of pure fun that it is to watch Doctor Who, to be part of that fandom and celebrate the past in that way. It's also notable that we've got 40 extra years of Doctor Who history at this point that you also need to celebrate, and we've got plenty of cast members that aren't with us and so on. Yeah, but ultimately, I really don't think this should be attempted again, because I don't think it would work particularly well.
And I mean, it has been attempted, just not on TV. I mean, Big Finish has attempted it on multiple occasions, bringing everyone back together in one way or another. And some have been better than others, but I don't think there's been a single swing that they've taken that has reached the level that the Five Doctors is on.
I'd say the closest they've got's The Legacy of Time, which actually kind of follows the same format where everyone has separate adventures and then comes together for the last few minutes. And I think that it worked, but it wasn't trying to be the Five Doctors. It was telling different stories and just tying them together and then having a bit of finale kind of tacked onto the Tom Baker bit. But yeah, it's really well done and it's a lot of fun. What do you think, Jimmy?
I'm always going to have a huge soft spot for this story because it was the first Doctor Who story I ever saw. I was a little kid in school and I was at my friend's place and her and her mum were off doing something out in the backyard. And I was just walking past the living room and I saw, these cool robots fighting each other. And I asked what it was and they said Doctor Who, and it was the scene with the Raston warrior robot slaughtering the Cybermen. And yeah, that was how I first discovered the show. So I'm always going to have a huge soft spot for this one. And I think it is great fun, does what it set out to do, has a pretty good part for everyone. I think I definitely agree the main problem is that Susan didn't get the good material she deserved. I actually went to a convention where Carol Ann Ford was the main guest about 2 weeks ago, and she had a lot to say about Five Doctors, and it's really good that she stood up for herself. And when the producers and writers, they had her calling the Doctor, Doctor, and she just said, no, why is she calling her grandfather Doctor? He's the grandfather. And they were all, oh, no, the Doctor can't be implied to have ever had sex. And she basically laughed at them and said, well, I'm not coming back unless you fix this. And so we're lucky she stood up for herself on that front. And also it changed my perspective a bit on the story to hear. She was talking about working with Herndl, and he must have cared about the part so much more than it might have seemed, because apparently after every single scene, every single take, he would go to Carol and check, am I doing him justice? Have I got this right? Is there anything you think I should change at all that doesn't feel right? And so it makes me appreciate his performance a lot more to know how much he cared about it. And I think they do make the Doctor a bit too grumpy, but, I mean, you can pass it off. I mean, he's in this horrible situation. His past and future selves are all together and they could get wiped out of existence. Of course he's going to be grumpy than usual. So I think it just about works. And, yeah, it is nice to see Susan again, and it is a shame about that tripping scene. I would have loved them to cut that and give her a minute to actually speak to any of the other incarnations of her grandfather. That was another thing she said at the convention, that her and Peter actually both were trying to give that sort of impression with their looks, and they'd worked it out together because they didn't have the dialogue. So, yeah, they were actually intending that. That's not just, you know, fan imagining. That was them trying to show the relationship. But, yeah, I mean, despite those faults, I love it. Troughton absolutely steals the show from the moment he appears. And it's, yeah, great fun, great stuff. Handles Gallifrey better than some stories do. Yeah, it's really good. I think the only little quibble I'd have with it is the continuity with the Brigadier again, because he sees Tegan in the chamber at the end, and he instantly recognises her as Miss Duvanka, but he was at his retirement thing when he was picked up with the Second Doctor. So how does he know her? He only met Tegan in Mordred Undead after he was retired from unit. So, yeah, they could have done something there, but, yeah, it's just a bit weird that he somehow recognises Tegan despite not having met her yet. But, other than that, like, other than, you know, stuff they could have done better, like better handling of Susan's relationship with the Doctor or messing up that little bit of continuity. But, I mean, those are just tiny nitpicks with what's ultimately a great, big, fun celebration of 20 years. And I think they did a really good job with it.
I don't think it is the Brigadier's retirement, is it? I thought it was a reunion.
I thought they said retirement, but maybe I'm misremembering. I thought it was his... Because Colonel's, what's his name, Crichton's his replacement, so I took that to mean, like, he's just starting out replacement. But, yeah, maybe I got it wrong and it was just a reunion, but I thought it was retirement.
I'm fairly sure it's a reunion that the Brigadier has returned to, so it's intended to be post-Mordrin.
Oh, Brigadier. Well, in that case, there goes that fold.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah, post-Mordrin Brigadier and hence him recognising Teagan. That's how I'm fairly sure anyway. It's kind of a shame that they couldn't get a few more people in for the reunion scene. Like, there was supposed to be Benton in there who the idea was he wouldn't have recognised the Second Doctor. And
yeah, that's that, why he gave it up. Apparently, he would have been that unit guard that wouldn't let the Second Doctor in. I think with the old returning guests as well, it's a bit of a shame that the Third Doctor gets that nice little bit with Liz and Yates and realising it's not them. And the Second Doctor scene with the fake Jamie and Zoe is brilliant because he managed to show so much emotion when he realises it's not them, and he's sort of, how, you can't destroy illusions while they're actually there. But as soon as they're gone, he's like, yes, it is rather sad. And it's just, yeah, Charlton absolutely aces it. And it's a bit of a pity that the First Doctor didn't get a scene like that, because you don't know who they would have got, but it could have been interesting. Maybe Barbara and Ian, seeing them together again, or maybe Sorry, go Kingdom. Dark and have Katarina and Sarah and Don't Kill Us Again, Doctor, or something like that.
Yeah, we're alive here, Doctor. Oh, that could have been good. Anyway, I'm not rewriting the Five Doctors, because for what it's trying to do, it is near perfect, and that's good enough for me. But yeah, it's an absolutely cracking story, and it's a worthy celebration of Doctor Who up to that point. And just sort of going back to something Greg said, one thing that does make it work is just how much of a consummate professional Peter Davison is. At no point does he try to hog the limelight or have a bit of a "it's my show now" attitude. Like, we know that Pertwee and Trout clashed during the Three Doctors. There doesn't appear to be any of that, but I think Terence Dix deliberately wrote it so the Doctors don't actually interact all that much to avoid this problem. In some ways, it's kind of a shame that it's Davison that gets shipped off to Gallifrey. It makes sense, you know, take the current Doctor out of what's going on in the Death Zone and give him his own mini plot. I kind of understand that. And then, you know, it gives you it kind of maximizes the effectiveness of the continuity with the same Castellan being used and him supposedly being outed as a traitor. I do wonder if Tom Baker had have shown up, he'd have got the Gallifrey scenes just to kind of shift him out of everyone's way. I don't know. But all in all, we like the Five Doctors. It does what it sets out to do pretty much perfectly. Like I say, I think Doctor Who has come close to sort of emulating that similar idea, the power of the Doctor being the idea, being the episode that sort of stands out to me TV-wise. But ultimately, nothing's ever going to top the Five Doctors, and I don't really think anybody should try, because it's good. It's great. Well, that's another season done. We've completed season 20. Good grief, we have done 20 seasons across what must be almost 40 episodes. I'm fairly sure we've split most of them into two now, haven't we? So coming up, we have season 21. We'll obviously get onto that soon. A bit of a weird one, 21, you know, a season that ends with an entirely different cast, main cast, as it did than it started with, which obviously that happened in 60s Doctor Who, but in 80s Doctor Who, it's a far more bonkers concept. So, yes, we'll be saying goodbye to the Fifth Doctor. We'll be saying hello to the Sixth Doctor, and we'll be discussing some pretty damn good stories along the way, and Warriors of the Deep. But meanwhile, I will say thank you and goodbye to Jimmy.
Thanks. It's been great.
And thank you and goodbye to Greg.
One day I shall come back, and that's probably in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, a few weeks' time. One day in a few weeks' time. Well, that's that then. Thank you for listening. Goodbye now.